Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about a subject that generates lots of interest, both in Indian country and outside of it. It's a provocative subject, and it's one that is important for each one of us to address. The perspective comes to us today from Dr. William Hablitzel. Dr. Hablitzel is a specialist in internal medicine. He's got a fascinating career background, and he's got a new book out that is really the theme for today's show. Bill, it's great to have you with us on today's edition of American Indian Living.
I appreciate the invitation.
You know, a lot of people are raising their eyebrows. It's catching a lot of attention when they just see the title of your book. Tell us the book that we're using to introduce our listeners to this important topic.
Well, the title of the book is indeed, it sort of catches your eye, and the title of the book is Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. And where the title comes from is an interaction that I had with a patient that has spanned a good part of my career. There is a gentleman that I met early in my practice career who was well known in our community. He was at the top of his game socially, professionally. You'd recognize his picture in the newspaper and on the local television. And when I saw him in my office, this was probably the most successful man I had ever encountered. And I thought that, gee, that must also mean he's the happiest person I ever met, because I equated success with happiness. But, you know, I was never quite sure. I never really saw this man smile, at least a genuine smile. He had a nice practice rehearsed smile. Over the years, we got to know each other, but he was never a frequent flyer in the office. And a few years ago, he began experiencing some strange sensations in his chest. It wasn't pain. It wasn't discomfort. It was just a presence. Something was there that wasn't there before. He thought it was reflux, maybe a little indigestion, and began taking antacids.
So he's just basically treating himself.
Everywhere he went, there was a roll of antacids in his car, his office, his home. And his family was alarmed, his friends were alarmed, and they urged him to go see his doctor. And you know, he refused. He said, no, you know, he'd take care of himself. He's sort of a guy thing.
Right, right. Typical male response, right?
Well, after about a couple months of this, he did something curious one day. He was sitting in a meeting and again experienced this now very familiar sensation, which he had probably experienced thousands of times. But this time, he got up and he walked out of the meeting early. He never did things like that. He walked out to his car, drove across town, parked in a parking garage, walked to the hospital, stood in line in the emergency department. When it was his turn, he stood in front of the registration clerk, pointed to his chest and said, I think there's something wrong with my heart. In that instant, he fell across her desk and died.
Whoa.
He was carried back into a trauma room. And sure enough, he was breathless, he was pulseless, he was dead. 10 minutes later, he had been resuscitated. 3 days later, he walked out of the hospital with an implantable defibrillator in his chest. 1 week later, he was standing in my office. When I walked into the examination room, there was no doubt in my mind that I was looking at a happy man. He was smiling. And he looked at me, and the first words out of his mouth were, dying was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Whoa. Okay. So we got
the... That's where the title comes from.
We got the picture. I mean, this is... one of the most dramatic things that happens, of course, in medicine is, you know, sudden cardiac death. And you had the privilege of, you know, catching it early and using the defibrillators. And really basically saving this gentleman's life. But what did he mean by that? Dying was the best thing that ever happened to me. Why was this such a transforming experience, other than being thankful that, you know, you guys had been used by the Creator or whatever to save him?
I think that's the magic of the story, and that's sort of the focus of the book, is that through life challenges, whether it be, in this case, a near-death experience, whether it's cancer, illness, family strife, losing a job, through challenge, I think we find incredible strength and incredible wisdom. And in this case, this gentleman, through this experience, I think he found the importance of the present moment. He had lived his life always looking at the future, another business acquisition, another task, another accomplishment. And he was one, like many people I see in my practice, often men, often executives or management or people that are always on the treadmill, that they're going to enjoy life later. I'll do that when I retire. I'll travel when I retire. Wow. I'll build that dream house when I have some more money or I have more time. And when you look to the future, you sort of miss what's in front of you. Huh. The opposite can be true, where we can spend so much of our life in our past. If only I had gone to college, I'd have a better job now. If only, you know, Dad had appreciated my efforts, I'd feel better about myself now. And we get stuck in those past, in those past events. And when we're thinking in the past, we can't appreciate what's before us. So I think this gentleman that I write about in the title story, the true miracle of his story was that it took something like this in his life to appreciate what was before him, what he had every day, and that's the present moment. And the miracle of his story is not that he was resuscitated, although that indeed is a miracle. The miracle is that, you know, this guy went for weeks, for months with these sensations. Why was it that that one moment in that morning he decided to do something about it?
That is incredible.
The miracle is that he drove across town in many minutes, and it wasn't until he was standing in front of that registration clerk that something happened to him. You know, why then? If this had happened any other place, any other time, he probably would never have survived. That's the true miracle.
Right.
And even more of a miracle is that he looked at me and he said, when I asked him, because you hear words like this, and these are pretty profound words, and I was shaken. And I asked him, what happened to you? We all hear stories about people that talk about near-death experiences, about seeing light, walking into the light. He didn't describe that. But what he did describe was, he said he understood everything. He knew what he was supposed to be doing with his life. He knew what he needed to do to find happiness, and he knew how to get there. He quit his job. He went back to the classroom and is now teaching college classes, sharing wisdom with others. And he's an incredibly happy person. And the benefit to us is that we don't have to have a near-death experience to grasp the importance of now, what makes life meaningful. We can learn from this man.
No, I think this is a tremendous illustration, Dr. Hablitzel. Many of our listeners come from different spiritual backgrounds, whether they're traditional Native American beliefs, whether they're Christian, whatever the background is. And I think many are listening to the story that you've just shared, and it's obvious that you can see the Creator's hand in sparing this man's life. But at the same time, their faith traditions, their spiritual traditions, do have the sense that's often lost in the modern world of the importance of living one day at a time, living in this day. And so I think you're really calling us back to something that historically is within our roots, surely in Indian country and beyond in the Judeo-Christian tradition. But this is really, I think, an important message that we need in a society that sometimes seems, as you point out, so focused on what didn't happen in the past, the if-onlys, as well as, you know, what I'm going to do when I retire or when the, you know, kids are finally grown or whatever the scenario is. So help me with this, you know, and before we get, you know, deeper into these subjects, I'm always trying to be sensitive to our listeners who can't be with us for the whole hour. We've got a great hour with Dr. Hablitzel speaking about this theme. But, Bill, if they can't listen to the whole show today, some people are wanting information about your book. How do they get a copy of the book?
The book's actually the publication date. It's the end of the week. It's just coming out. It should be in stores now. But it's also available on our website, and that website is dyingwasthebestthing.com. And what's special about that site is your listeners can read a fascinating story, one that will actually bring meaning and maybe some healing to their life, and they won't have to spend a cent. If they have internet access, the website will email them the first chapter of the book along with the foreword and the introduction.
Oh, great.
And they can read a fascinating story about one of my first patients in medicine, a VA patient, who literally, his lessons walk with me in every examination room I walk into.
Great. So dyingwasthebestthing.com. That will get us access to the first chapter of your book free of charge.
Correct. And there's information about how they can get the book if they can't find it at their local store. But it should be pretty much everywhere by now.
Okay, yeah. And, of course, those of you tuning in today, this is a pre-recorded show. So by the time this show is airing, you should be able to get a copy of Dr. Hablitzel's new book. It's published by Sunshine Ridge Publishing. The title, Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me, Stories of Healing and Wisdom Along Life's Journey. Bill, I can spell your name quite easily because it's sitting right in front of me, but for the benefit of our listeners, you want to run through that spelling for them?
The spelling of the name is H-A-B, as in boy, L-I-T, Z as in zebra, E-L, and it's Hablitzel.
Hablitzel. I'm going to get it before we finish this this interview, Bill.
It's sort of a complicated name, but I figured if my mother was able to learn how to say it after 80 years, we can do it here in about 90.
Okay, good. Well, that's encouraging. Dr. Hablitzel is a internal medicine specialist. You currently are practicing in southwestern Ohio, is that correct?
Correct. I just recently moved my practice from suburban Cincinnati out to a small community in rural Ohio at the foothills of the Appalachians. And I spend my time between that practice and at the University of Cincinnati at the College of Medicine, where I'm on the faculty there, and I work with medical residents and medical students.
Great. Actually, I did my internal medicine training not far from there at Wright State University.
Yes, it's our backyard.
Well, let's go back to the subject today. And, you know, for those of us who have not had a near-death experience, those of us who've never had the defibrillator used on us, what is it for someone who perhaps has lost track of those spiritual roots that may be in their heritage, and they're basically just kind of sucked up in the conventional wisdom pursuits of the majority culture here in North America? What kind of lessons do you have for them?
The lessons are diverse, and they're also very simple. And that gives us something that we can talk about here in the next segment.
Yeah, we've got to go through this because those of you who are not planning on having the defibrillator used on you in the near future. You still need these lessons. Dr. Havlitzel is going to be with us for the entire hour. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got a lot more coming up about spiritual meaning, living in the present. Dying was the best thing that ever happened to me. Stay tuned for more in just a couple minutes.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, also known as NAHI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHI is available at nahicharity.org. The Lifestyle Center of America is another American Indian Living sponsor. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 1-800-596-5480.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today with Dr. William Havlitzel. Dr. Havlitzel is with the University of Cincinnati. He is an internal medicine specialist, but through his experiences as a physician and as a healthcare provider in other settings that we'll learn about later in the show, Dr. Havlitzel has gained some insights into some of the spiritual traditions that are deeply rooted in Indian country as well as in other cultures. He's speaking to us today about information that's contained in his book, Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. If you missed the first part of the show, the title story, Bill, why don't you just summarize very briefly for the benefit of those who are just coming to join us this segment.
The title story involved a gentleman that experienced sudden death, which is very common in our society with the prevalence of heart disease. And he just happened to have been in the emergency department when this happened, and he was taken care of, he was revived, but through that experience he found great wisdom and meaning in his life and told me in the first day that I saw him afterwards that dying was the best thing that ever happened to him.
You know, this is these moments of truth, of insight, that really connect us with the spiritual realities of life are powerful. And today's show, we're trying to help people have an easier way than going through a near-death experience to kind of tap into these things that maybe their parents, grandparents, their elders, whoever it was, may have shared with them in the past, and they really got just caught up in the world that we live in, the kind of values that tend to surround us, and they kind of lost sight of some of those spiritual things. Bill, we want to speak about some of the lessons that you bring out in your book, and you know, one of them that you and I have talked about is, I think, really resonates in Indian country, this whole aspect of giving. Tell us a little bit about giving and gratitude and how all this can help us in the short term with these important tasks.
Giving is one of the most powerful, not only teachers, but one of the most powerful tools that we have of getting into the present moment, embracing it, and finding in that moment happiness. Mm. I always equated giving with giving some money to a charity, maybe volunteering some time. But I never really appreciated the power of giving until I started seeing it at work in the lives around me. Hmm. And there's an old proverb that states, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I think it's very true that you mentioned that relatives, and we've had many teachers, and often we sort of ignored the lessons. Mm-hmm. And it's not until we're ready to really be willing to step back and see the lesson and absorb it that we're able to really appreciate it, maybe incorporate it into our life. And such was the case with giving in my life. I have a patient that came to see me one day that had some vague abdominal discomfort, more of mm-hmm. a tingling, numbing sensation in the upper abdomen. The description of it wasn't something that made me very concerned because it seemed very superficial. But when I lifted up this lady's shirt, I was shocked with what I saw. There was a fairly recent scar. It was a surgical scar, you know, the telltale railroad track. And it stretched mm-hmm. from the middle of her abdomen all the way around her back to the middle of her back.
Whoa.
And it literally looked like someone tried to cut her in two with a chainsaw. And I jumped back and I said, "My goodness, what has happened to you?" And she matter-of-factly looked at me and she said, "Oh, that, I gave my kidney to my brother-in-law."
Huh.
And I was stunned. I was astonished, and I had to sit down. And I spent many minutes talking with her about this. And I said, "You know, this is one of the most generous things I think I've ever heard." And she looked at me and she said, "Oh, no." She said, "It was my brother-in-law that had the hard part. He accepted my gift, and it wasn't until I have gone through this that I've ever had the opportunity to really give something substantial in my life. I was able to give of myself. I've never done that, and I found that I've never been happier."
Mm.
This is one of my teachers, and she spoke of the power of giving, and she's absolutely right, that in the moment that we give, we can find extreme happiness, extreme meaning, and how long that lasts is up to us. It's a choice. We don't have to give away a kidney. We don't have to give away a lot of money. We can give our life away. We can give ourselves away. We can answer the telephone in a pleasant voice. We can give a generous tip at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. We can mow the lady's lawn down the street that may be alone and may be having difficulty. And in that moment, we're going to find happiness. And so, you know, so that's a very powerful lesson, that of giving.
You know, Dr. Hablitzel, what you're sharing, at least, you know, I know many of our listeners are listening and they're saying, you know, "I can relate to that, you know, as a Muslim or as a Christian or as, you know, from my traditional Native American perspective." And I mention all those. I mean, even though The show is especially designed for a Native American audience. We know that people from all kinds of different backgrounds are tuning into this show, as we're on many, many stations throughout the country. But at the same time, even though there are these faith traditions, whatever they might be, spiritual traditions in the community, the tribe, whatever it might be, that people can say, well, yes, this is, I can relate to this. This sounds very familiar. At the same time, there's this other aspect of living, Bill. And, you know, most of us have been taught to, you know, to try to make things comfortable for ourselves, you know, try to make things familiar, make things safe. And when you start talking about giving, I mean, especially something of the magnitude of giving your kidney, whatever it might be, I mean, dramatic, selfless gifts, these things really are often are very uncertain. We're paving new ground, and that would seem, many people from a kind of contemporary culture would say, well, how could this really help us? I mean, how do you deal with that kind of contrast in ways of looking at things?
Uncertainty is a precious gift that we have. It's a concept that no matter what your spiritual or religious background is, it's something that in the physical world, we have to deal with uncertainty. There's no guarantee of tomorrow. Life can change in the blink of an eye. And when we're able to sort of slow the treadmill of our daily life down a little bit, maybe find some quiet, and so we can listen to that voice that speaks to us, and we appreciate more that, you know, there is no guarantee of tomorrow. All I have is today to make today the best I can make it. This is where I will find happiness. So, you know, we can actually look at uncertainty then as a very powerful reminder of why we need to stay in the present moment.
So most people go through life with a set of scripts. They have in their mind from growing up, well, this is what success is like. This is what will bring happiness if I enter into this either area of work, or I end up having a family or so many children or whatever it might be. And so we have these scripts that are written out going way out into the future, and we think that we'll be happiest if that script is played out. And what I hear you saying is those deviations from the script, those things that happen that we wouldn't choose, maybe some of the things that are really the most valuable as far as helping us treasure the moments that we're given.
Indeed. And that that journey into uncertainty, which is really a journey into our physical lives, because we don't know what tomorrow will bring, mm-hmm. can be very exciting and can be filled with incredible lessons, and we can find incredible meaning and happiness. But it takes a little bit of courage. We have to be willing to be able to accept that opportunity and to walk that path. You know, it's that concept of the road less traveled that can make incredible difference in our lives. And certainly, some of the concepts that we've talked about and some of the lessons that my teachers, my patients have taught me are certainly not things we learn in medical school.
No, definitely not. Dr. Bill Hablitzel is the author of Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. We're going to have Dr. Hablitzel with us for the rest of the show. We've got another half ahead of us. More important information that's going to help you tap into your spiritual roots. Some powerful insights from Dr. Hablitzel's patients as contained in his book. Stay tuned for more. We'll be back.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something
to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our second half of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking about living in the moment, insights that are coming to us from Dr. Bill Hablitzel. Dr. Hablitzel, if you're puzzled by why I say his name different ways throughout the show, it's because I myself have trouble with that name, Bill, and you told me that's not a unique problem.
No, it's I hear several variations, and they're all fine.
Okay, but however you pronounce it, it's spelled H-A-B as in boy, L-I-T-Z-E-L, and you want to know that name because his new book that's out is called Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. If they can't remember how to spell your name, what key words do they need to remember to get to your website, Bill?
I think, just search on Google, Dying Was the Best Thing, and you're gonna bring up our site. Actually, there is a site, dyingwasthebestthing.com, in which they can have the first, your listeners can have the first chapter of the book emailed to them and read an incredible, healing, and powerful story about a man named Roger, who was a teacher of mine, one of my first teachers as a doctor.
Great, great. We're talking about these lessons that we can learn, and the title story, as we've mentioned a couple of times, comes from the story of a man who did not actually die in the truest sense of the word. He did have a terminal event, sudden cardiac death. He was resuscitated, so he was not actually buried, and he didn't come back to this world as a spirit and say dying was the best thing that ever happened to me. This was a true life experience that that you shared in as this gentleman's physician. But we've been saying, how can we learn lessons like the importance of living in the present without going through such a traumatic event in our life? You shared with us a couple of things, Bill, already. One was the whole aspect of giving. When we give, this helps us to really enter into the full potential we have of living in the present. You mentioned treasuring uncertainty, valuing that, because uncertainty as it creeps into our life seems to maybe derail our plans. It really may be opening up new vistas where we can really appreciate and live in the present. But you are not just writing from the standpoint of an observer as a physician, but you have your own life journey that I think is a fascinating story, and many of our listeners can relate to, because you did not start life, if I understand your story right, you know, out of the crib. You didn't have a stethoscope on and a doctor's bag. Is that correct?
That's correct. Although very early on, you know, I always thought I wanted to do medicine. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of my goal growing up and going through high school. And when I got to college, I think there was some uncertainty, there's that word again, as to mm-hmm. what my path should be. And, you know, youth, you know, sometimes as in our inexperience of youth, we have to learn some lessons. And so I chose a different route. And when I was in college, I just didn't feel inspired. And in that first year of college, I began exploring other things. And I was reading my hometown newspaper one day while I was actually waiting for a calculus exam at my university, that our local community was recruiting volunteers for their fire department, that they had just started an ambulance service and they needed more help. And that sort of appealed to me. I said, gee, you know, I've been interested in medicine, but I really don't know if I can really handle patients or sick people, or I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. So I investigated becoming a volunteer in the fire department, and I became an EMT, which is an emergency medical technician, to work on the ambulance, and became a volunteer firefighter. And I really, it was one of my first experiences with really giving and being of service to others, mm-hmm. and it really appealed to me. We didn't have advanced life support in our community, and we had a rare opportunity for several of us to be trained as paramedics, and I just jumped at the opportunity. It was it was part of that uncertainty of that journey that we spoke about, that, you know, I wasn't sure if this is the path I wanted to take, but I knew it was a path that would be different for me. So I became a paramedic, and what I thought was going to be maybe a few months away from college turned out to be much more, because I was offered a job as a full-time firefighter paramedic in my hometown, mm-hmm. and I was among the first group of paramedics we had in the community. And I did that for about 5 years. Okay. And it was... I met incredible people, incredible teachers in the back of an ambulance, and you really see life strip down to its essence when you're mm-hmm. dealing with someone hurt or injured or seriously mm-hmm. ill in the back of an ambulance or in a burning house. And I had an opportunity to encounter fear in my life, going through the fire academy and doing things that, you know, I really didn't think I was going to like. I'm not much on heights, and here I was on top of these ladders. But after a few years of that, one of the chiefs came to me one day after we had a very difficult run, and the gentleman that we went to help didn't survive, and he had very small children that was there, and they sort of saw this whole thing. That sort of bothered me. He put a hand on my knee and he said, you know, what are you still doing here? And I looked at him and said, well, it's not time to go home yet. I said, no, not that. I mean, what are you doing here in this work, in this place? And he said, maybe you can do more. And that sort of struck a chord with me that, you know, I realized then that the journey that I had set out on years earlier, I was really, excuse me, on the same journey. I was just taking a different route to get there. So I went mm-hmm. back to school, and college seemed so much easier the second time around. Mm-hmm. I knew where I wanted to be and where I was going. So, you know, I went to medical school just very close to my hometown. I still lived in the community. And it wasn't until I finished medical school that I left my community and went down to Cincinnati to do my residency. From there, I joined the faculty at the University of Cincinnati, and I've been there ever since, teaching and, more importantly, learning from these wonderful students and these wonderful patients.
I mean, this is a great story that I think resonates throughout Indian country, Bill. I mean, because, you know, there are many, many stories. I mean, not just among Native Americans, but among, you know, people of every population group. I mean, when we're young, we often make decisions that even lead us away from maybe the calling we had sensed, the vision we had for our life, maybe, you know, what our elders told us we were, you know, best suited to do, how we could best give back to the community, whatever the things that were instilled in us, either through our own minds, through power outside of us, through individuals, through the creator, whatever people want to term it. And, you know, you tell this story of how really the things that made some people have looked like detours really were part of the process that made you the insightful and effective physician that you are.
I am convinced that the twists and turns that occur in life it's part of the path, it's part of the plan, and we need to be open to that. And again, you know, traditionally in medicine, docs, we are not trained to be very open people. We're sort of trained to be very rigid. We like history. We like to do things the way we've always done things before. And it's sort of hard to be open to new things and new possibilities. But until we are, we really can't experience just the extreme joy there is in life.
You know, important message, Dr. Hablitzel, sharing with you. Those of you tuning in today, if you feel like you've put some of your plans, some of your vision on hold because of other things, it's not too late to maybe pursue the very thing that you've been called to do. Bill, one of the other issues that you deal with in your book is this whole aspect that every single one of us has an influence on one another. We all have, you know, some people have used the term energy, other people have used the term influence, others use, you know, atmosphere. Tell us a little bit about that concept and why it's so important.
I think it's an incredibly important concept, one that I see every day in my life and in my patients' lives, but I didn't always appreciate it. There's certainly an energy or something about all of us that affects others. We all know people that can walk into a room and just brighten everything up. Mm-hmm. People you just really like to be around. You know, they're the hit of the party. And we also know the opposite. We know people that can walk in a room and everyone sort of feels down or say, oh, not this person again. You know, I got to get out of here. You know, what could cause that if not a field of energy or, you know, an atmosphere? And it's not only what people or things can exert, but it's the fact that it can change us. You know, the energy that surrounds us can change us. And I found that the energy that surrounds us can profoundly change our lives of how we feel. And much of that comes down to a choice. How many times do we hear in medicine where people come see us and they'll say, I'm having trouble sleeping. I just can't sleep. I go to bed and I toss and I turn. There's stuff in my mind. And I ask them, you know, what do you do before you go to bed? And in medicine, we're taught to think about in terms of chemicals, and we talk about caffeine, and we talk about medications that they may be on. But there's something more subtle, and I think much more powerful, and that's the energy or the environment that we surround ourselves in. So I often hear that, what do you do before you go to bed? And many people tell me they watch the evening news, and there, in a half hour, they hear about all the crime and all the violence in their community. They hear about the failing economy and the rising gasoline prices that we're not going to be able to afford to survive next month. We even hear about bird flu that's going to, you know, ravage our society. And we hear all this stuff, and that's the environment that we invite into our lives. And then we go to bed, and we think we're going to sleep. We have a choice. We have a choice to turn that switch off and maybe listen to some soft music, reading an inspirational book, or That's even nice. More powerful, finding some moments of silence and reflecting upon ourselves.
I mean, excellent observations, Dr. Hablitzel. We're going to be back with our final segment with Dr. Hablitzel. He's the author of Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. You can get more information about his book at dyingwasthebestthing.com. But we've got more. We've got some more important insights that can help you and those that you love. Don't miss our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by the Lifestyle Center of America. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center and used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 800-596-5480. American Indian Living is also sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, known as NAHAI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHAI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHAI is available at nahaicharity.org.
Canned vegetables. Hey, Duncan, get over here. I need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on. Help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I want them.
Sorry. Duncan!
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Yeah, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Dr. William Hablitzel, he's our guest, the author of Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. He's sharing with us stories, insights from his years as a physician and EMT paramedic that have really given him insights into the importance of living one day at a time. And regardless of where you are today throughout Indian country or whether you're listening today, you don't have Native American roots, I think the concepts that Dr. Hablitzel is sharing resonate with people from variety of spiritual traditions, and we're gaining some important insights that really help us say what's really important, what am I focusing on, where am I really channeling my energies. You know, we left off our last segment by speaking about that whole concept of energy, atmosphere, our unconscious influence, if you will, and really you were kind of bridging, at least as I heard your explanation, Bill, with the whole, you know, psychological, what we call, you know, this kind of psychophysical connection where the mind is affecting the body. You talked about the scenario of people who are restless, agitated, can't sleep, and encouraging them to turn off that TV well before going to bed. We've got so many inputs, though, that seem to overstimulate us. And can we say Bill, if the TV, if you're not watching TV, that everything else is pretty much fair game. It's going to be good for helping you live in the moment.
I think there are many examples of ways that we can help purify, if you will, our environment, or at least find a higher energy around us. Television can be one. We can. There is very good television out there. I think we have to be. Look, unfortunately, bad news sells newspapers, and that's there's an energy to that bad news, and it influences it. It affects us. The movies we watch. There's been abundance of studies, you know, and I have to get the doctor part of me in there because I was trained to look at studies. And there's abundance of studies that look at violence in movies that we watch, or even now violent video games, looking at children and adolescents, and that can relate to aggressive behavior. And so, you know, these are choices of things that we do. Other things that we can do.
Well, let me just stop you there. Excuse me, Bill, because I think this is really a key issue that you're highlighting here. You know, a lot of people say these things are just innocent entertainment. It's just recreation. And what you're saying from the standpoint of a physician and someone who's very focused on trying to help us get the most out of life, that a lot of these things are really these violent video games, violent movies, television are counterproductive. Am I hearing you right?
I think they're extremely counterproductive. I believe in many ways that what we think about happens. At least what we think about influences the way we feel. Mm-hmm. And so if you are playing a violent video game, during those moments that you're playing that, this is what's in your thoughts. And mm-hmm. I don't think we can find happiness there. And it's... unfortunately, many of our youth are involved in this and don't have the experience yet in selecting their activities. And sometimes, I think, make it on a path in their life that years later they would choose differently.
So when we talk about better options for youth, I mean, one of the senses I get from your book and from the interview today is maybe the optimal thing would be to try to encourage our youth to get involved in some social project, a community activity. Are these the kind of things that might be some of the optimal things for young people?
I think that would be a great use of time. We've discussed about the power of giving. So, you know, you get involved in some of these social programs. You not only, you know, you get to experience that giving, but, you know, you can also, I hate to say the words do nothing, but in many ways, finding silence, finding quiet, finding solitude. I do that out in nature. I'm big on birds, and I'll just go out in the woods and I'll sit. And I find there that in that quiet, you know, the voice inside me speaks to me louder there. And I really feel energized, and I really feel a higher level of energy about me. I feel happier. And when I leave, I can go back into my professional world, and I take a part of that with me. And it makes me happier, and I'm able to help others. So, you know, a few minutes every day, I think it's important that we find some quiet time to sort of shut out the outside world. And I think that some call this meditation, some call this prayer, some call it just being quiet. And I think it's an important thing that we can do for our physical and for our emotional health.
No, this is a powerful concept, and of course, you know, deeply rooted in Indian country. I mean, perhaps one of the most familiar examples of it outside of Indian country is the concept of the vision quest. I mean, getting out away from things in nature, communing with the Creator, and having a clear sense, being given a clear sense of purpose and meaning for life. But, you know, as you point out, Bill, this is something that, you know, can be done on a recurrent basis, and this isn't foreign to any of the spiritual traditions, whether they're indigenous Native American traditions or otherwise. This concept, though, is in vast contrast to what we see in contemporary culture. I mean, most people in contemporary culture, if you said, boy, I had a great weekend, I went out in nature and reflected, and they say, boy, you know, listen, if you had that, if you had nothing to do, I mean, give me a call, you know, we go out to a show, I mean, great, you know, movies are playing this, we go out to eat, whatever, the disco, or whatever the list is. It seems that modern culture wants to tell us if we're not doing something, if we're not busy all the time, we're missing out on something. Did you find that is a common theme as you encounter people?
Yes, indeed. It's and I think it's part of our journey, part of our understanding of what's important. And I've had the benefit of seeing many people around me sort of chase our modern lifestyle and measure happiness with acquisitions and stuff that we accumulate that we're certainly not going to take it with us. We didn't come into this world with it. We're not going to take it with us. And sometimes, you know, this is a process. We have a lifetime to learn this, and I think that's part of what we're here for is to learn that. And but I'm in a position, and I want to share with others the concept that, you know, we can learn from others. We can learn the lessons that others have learned about the importance of now, the importance of finding quiet, the importance of giving, the importance of gratitude. We can learn that through the trials and challenges of others without having to go through that challenge ourselves if we're willing to be open and accept that possibility.
You do talk a lot about gratitude. I'm aware of that, Bill. How do you help someone cultivate that attitude when the world would say you're going through really bad stuff? Maybe it's a critical illness, maybe the death of a loved one. How can someone cultivate gratitude even in those very sad situations, if you will?
Well, we can certainly be sad when a loved one or a friend may be ill, or maybe even when we lose them. But we also need to take a sort of a step back and look at the big picture, in that we've been blessed with perhaps years, perhaps a lifetime, with that individual's influence in our life. And they're part of us now. And we can be, there can be a lot of gratitude for that. If we step back and look around us, we can find gratitude everywhere. And that gratitude sort of is what, is sort of the fuel that generates the energy of our lives. And I think it's a very important concept that gratitude is there.
Very good. I mean, Bill, it's been a tremendous program. I've enjoyed doing it with you. Dr. Hablitzel, he's the author of Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me, Stories of Healing and Wisdom Along Life's Journey. It is available at the airtime of this show. You can get more information and a free chapter of the book by going to Dr. Hablitzel's website, dyingwasthebestthing.com. Bill, any final words of wisdom as we close out today's show?
I encourage everyone to be aware of the teachers around them and to embrace those lessons and incorporate them into their life and find happiness.
Thanks so much, Dr. William Hablitzel. I'm Dr. David DeRose with American Indian Living. For all of us, wishing you the very best of health.